I'm here today with Don Springer and Oliver Duong. They are the creators and publishers of Inspired Eye magazine and the podcast by the same name. And if you're not checking those things out, I highly recommend you do it. So anyway, welcome, guys. Appreciate you being here today after a few Skype hiccups.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Nice.
Yeah, sorry, I'm on a PC, so I guess I'm the one who should apologize.
Nah, that's all right. That's all right. Someone's got
Mac snobs.
I do both, so I guess I have to anyway. So anyway, welcome. You know, I tell you, I feel like I already know you guys. I listen to all your podcasts and read your blogs pretty regularly. So,
cool.
Yeah. So I hope everybody else does too when they get done listening to this, because I think you contribute a lot to the photography community in general and specifically street photography. So. To get started, I just really wanted to ask you both if you could just tell us a little bit about yourselves and kind of how you got into photography and a little bit about your background and where it took you to today, and we'll take it from there. So I don't know how you want to start. We could start with age before beauty.
Or we can do ladies first. Go ahead, Don. You can talk.
How far back do we want to go? A long ways back. You know what
dinosaurs.
I mean?
Well, he'll be talking about dinosaurs all day.
Yeah, I don't want to do that. Let's see. We could start with electricity, I guess.
I don't want to go. I mean, I'll just say that I discovered what a photograph really was, what it really meant when I was 13 years old. That's when I discovered what a photograph really meant. Before that, I've had access to photographs, but I didn't understand it. At that point in time, I looked at a photograph and completely understood what a photograph was. So now let's move on. Let's move on to pre-Vietnam. I was already shooting pretty heavy. I was 19 years old. I was already very serious working on the streets and stuff like that. This is 1966, 67, 68. And when I found out I was going over, I went to a camera store that I always went to, named Cosman's Camera. It was in Philadelphia. He was the premier Leica dealer in the continental United States. And I walked in and I told him what was going on. And he went to the back and he came out, had this box. And he handed me this box and said, look, you know, this is a really nice camera and a lens. Take it with you. And I opened it. It was a Black Lac M4. A 35 Summicron and a 50 F2 Summicron.
He gave that
and
to
it
you?
Was a match set. He gave it to me. And I said, like, I said, Herman, you know, I cannot afford this camera. He said, listen, take it with you. Use it. Just photograph your brains out. He said, if you make it back, you can give it back to me or we're pay for it. If you don't make it back, no big deal. Forget about it. So I did make it back. and I took the camera to him. And he laughed and he just told me to keep it, and I still have it. It's an amazing camera. That was, and at that point, I had dedicated my existence to photography, not just as being a photographer, but to photography, to Mother Light and to photography. Well, you know, of course, what that means is, you know, of course, you know, doing my own work, but more importantly, spreading whatever knowledge I knew or could gather from other sources and getting it out there to other people. And that's what I've been doing ever since then. I'm still doing it.
I know you do a lot of street shooting now.
Yes, yeah.
And have you always been shooting on the street?
Yes, I've been on the street. It's funny because I was a street photographer before I knew what street photographers were. I didn't know what it was. I mean, I think back then, if I'm not mistaken, this is like way after Vietnam. They didn't use that term street photographer. There was the curator for Prince and Pictures at the Philadelphia Museum of Art. His name was Ding McNulty. It was really Nealon, but close friends called him Ding, and he told me to call him Ding. And I would go to see him all the time because I had no formal education in photography, no formal education in anything. All I knew was how to get in trouble, and, you know, how to do what the Army taught me to do. And then I was a grunt. So Ding was the first person in 1972 that called me street shooter. He actually called me Street Shooter. I felt kind of weird with that name. It was kind of like I'm going to go out and shoot somebody with my guns or something. You know what I mean? I felt kind of strange. Back then, it really wasn't street photography. It was candid photography. You're a candid photographer. But, you know, that's what they called it. I didn't relate to it that way because I'm really not into, like, you know, to me, in my mind, it's like candid portraits, you know, like, you know, sneaking around the street with a camera making portraits of people that they don't know you're making their portrait. I mean, you know, and I mean, we all do it, you know, but to me, that's what candid photography is, not street photography.
I was reading a blog post of yours a while ago, and I remember you said that after you get back from Vietnam, you're walking the streets of Philadelphia and with a, I think, a different perspective or a different eye, something like that. I don't know if you remember writing that, but what do you mean by that?
Yeah, I think that, you know, what happens is that when you go to school, they try to, you know, they try to drum it into your brain to look at your subject matter as if you're seeing it for the first time. You know, like a pure vision, you know. It's like, I guess that's really what they're talking about, some kind of a pure vision. It doesn't exist. The way I do it and the way I approach life and the way I pass on to people that are interested in what I have to say is to see and look at something as if you're seeing it for the last time. Now, you know, you sit there and say, well, that doesn't sound so complicated, but it really is, because basically, at the heart and the core of a silver image or now a digital image, a photograph is nothing more than a representation of a memory. It's the most important thing about a photograph is the memory. It's nothing becomes more important than that. Subject matter, nothing is as important as the memory. So if you're looking something for the first time, you can't possibly have a memory of what that is, because you're just going to look at it and you're taking it for granted. You take it for granted. You go to grandmom's house, you go to your friend's house, you look at a building. You take it for granted. You look at it the first time and say, oh, yeah, that's cool looking. You make a picture, boom, and you leave. And you know that the next month when you come back out, walk down that corner, that building's going to be there. That grandmom's going to be there. This is going to be there. So you get complacent and you make photographs of it again. But if you look at that and say, you know, I may never, ever see this again as long as I live. Let that photograph that I make be worthy of what that means. Now you become a real photographer.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up. I mean, because, I mean, you were in war. You were shot at, in danger. And I think that's something that most of us can't relate to that have never been in that situation. But when you're in a situation where people are trying to kill you, you're probably going to think about that a lot. Gee, if I don't get through this, this is the last time I'm going to see the sunset, or the last time I'm going to be able to take a picture, or, you know, sit here in this rice paddy, you know, and I would imagine that's pretty much ingrained in it.
I mean, you're right. But, you know, but that's looking at it as in my frame of mind and in my life, looking at it and saying, I may never see the sunset again, or I may never see this building again. You know, when I was in Vietnam, that was like part of it, but it was such a small part. It didn't mean anything to me. What meant something to me was that we'd be sitting around in the morning before we go out on a mission or something. You know, and I got my Leica, so I'm just like clicking pictures, boom, 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 make a picture of the guys. And there's like 13 of us, boom, boom, boom. 3 days later, we come back in. There's 9 of us. Hmm. There's 9 of us and 4 photographs that I made of 4 guys that didn't come back, or they came back really racked up, lost an arm or a leg or something.
Wow.
You get it?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's how I guess it kind of like ingrained in me the power of a photograph and the power of memory was that, you know, I would say, you know, I'm tight with these guys. We're hanging out and we're fighting for each other. You know what I mean? And all of a sudden, you know, we bring them back in a black plastic bag. You know what I mean? So, and I had the photographs. And then the issue that I dealt with, especially after I got home, this guy Jock was like sending film home for me, you know, black and white film. You know, I don't want to get into all that because what he was doing was kind of illegal. What I was doing was basically illegal. It wasn't going through censorship, you know. Mm-hmm. But so what happens is, I'm back home and I have all these negatives that I got prints made. You know, I went to Cosme. He made these little 3.5 by 5 prints of everything. Hundreds of rolls of film. He just did it for me, did all of it. And then I'm looking and say, oh, my God, this guy died on January 19th. This guy went on February 14th. And I'm looking, I'm thinking, what do I do? Do I send those photographs to his family? Do I try to seek out his family and send these photographs? What do I do with these? So I didn't do anything with him. And then Ding made arrangements for me a couple of years later. Ding made arrangements for me. We sent him into the Library of Congress, which is where they are in a locked vault that I have access to and no one else will have access to it. If I want to be released, they'll be released. And I've been asked to do a book a couple of times. I'm not doing it. You know, I'm sure by now most of the parents of these guys, parents are probably going to dead anyway, you know. But, you know, I just don't know what to do, man. I feel, you know, I just really don't know what to do.
Well, they're still there.
The memories there, you know, that's the whole thing. The memories, right? The photograph now became a memory. It became a very important substrate for a memory.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. So, Oliver.
I got nothing as deep as that.
Who does?
Yeah, let me just tell it right now. But actually, I am. I'm actually Haitian. I was born in Haiti. My dad is French, but his line comes from Vietnam. So I'm French, Haitian, Vietnamese, and basically, one day I was hanging out with in a library because, you know, they had internet back then and not everybody had it. So I had to go there and, you know, go online and stuff like that. And one day I found some photos on the screen, you know, and for the first time, it's like I saw all these pieces together. You know, it was my first experience of actually having vision, you know, but not really vision for photography, vision for design. You know, so I took all these pieces and I bought them together and made a nice poster out of it, you know, and it actually ended up being to cover for a documentary. Fast forward a couple of years, I went to design. Well, I went to school for design, and where I was, it was actually in a basement. So on the right, there was where the designers went for education, school, and stuff like that. And on the left, there were the photographers. You know what I mean? And I was always a design guy, so I went on the right, you know, and studied design, principles of design, and stuff like that. And something very, very interesting happened is that I got a good case of gas. You know what I mean? I had a friend. Yeah. Yeah. She had a professional looking camera, you know, which later I found out was named the Nikon D80. So I'm like, I Googled it and I say Nikon D80, you know, and the first thing that popped in, and then it's like, I think there was a guy who was selling it for $500 or something. And the only thing I knew is that I didn't have this camera. I had the money. I have to get it. You know, that's pure gas. So I went and bought the camera. And yeah, I didn't do anything serious with my camera at all, you know, until one day I realized that everything that I learned in graphic design, I could actually apply it in photography, you know. So all the principles like contrast, repetition, alignment, proximity, everything that I've learned there. And actually, the education I received as a designer, you know, it was as simple as, you know, go do your projects. You know, here's a project, design this, design that, whatever. But on the side, you know, I really read a lot on design, the principles of design, of psychology and things like that. And one day I realized that, man, I can actually my education in photography did not happen on the left where the photographers were. It happened on the right. Mm-hmm. And I make a seamless transition between design and photography. You know, one day I was with a huge print, and somebody was like, "Whoa, that is so cool! How did you did that? You know, you're not even in a photography school." I'm like, "Yeah, but you know, I'm on the other side, and it's still the same thing. If you know how to apply certain things, you know, it's completely the same thing." But in all due honesty, you know, my photographs back then, you know, they were sterile. You know what I mean? If they were compositionally correct, mm-hmm. you know, well exposed, everything was all right with them. You know, but one thing they missed is they didn't have that emotional punch. You see what I mean? And that's only way later that I discovered that what I was that I always believe that photographs equal composition, you know. But it's only way later that I learned that the most important part of photograph is actually the heart element, you know, the emotions that you can get out of it. Because up until I learned what I needed to learn in photography, like, you know, the basics, ISO, shutter speed, all these things. I learned them. I knew them. It wasn't a problem. But the problem is I never really understood that I could actually express myself with a camera, because I was still thinking like a graphic designer, and I was stiff in it. You know, it's like, that's why a teacher told me, you know, you have a very defined vision of what photography is. You know, it was like building, you know, here you go, leaf, bam, you know, until something happened. My mom actually died in the Haitian earthquake. And I don't remember when that was. And something happened there is that I did not have a photograph of my mother that completely told the story of how I felt for her. You know, yeah, I had snapshots and stuff like that, but I never had a photograph that encapsulates everything that I felt for her and that I wanted to say. You know, so when my mom died and stuff like that, it kind of hit me that, you know, you got to express yourself, because I was raised kind of in the old school way. Like, you do not express yourself. You do not show any emotions. You know, you're a guy. You zip it. You shut up. You never say anything, you know, and I believed that, you know, until later, especially when my mom died. It's like I have to express myself, because or else I'm the one who's going to explode, you know, or implode. So that's when the heart element really melted with the graphic design element. And that's when I really, really felt comfortable calling myself a photographer, because when I was a graphic designer making pictures, there was still something missing, and I couldn't really put my hands on what it was until my mother died, and I understood, you know, it's the heart. It's really expressing yourself through photography, you know.
Mick, can I ask a question?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, Oliver. So you're doing a good job of keeping. I mean, look, you're my buddy. You know what I mean? Like my grandkid at this point. But you're doing a good job of keeping the act and purpose of photography separate from what your life experience is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, you know, here's the thing: the way I was raised was. It's very disconnected, you know. It's very my dad had I think he had what, 6-7 siblings, so he had to develop tough skin, you know what I mean? So he passed that on to me, you know. He passed it on to me where I had to develop tough skin and just never, and I mean never, show emotions, you know. That's why it's still a process for me to actually release and say, you know, certain things, and actually release and say certain things, and even making pictures. Actually, there's a disconnect between my life experiences, how I feel and how I express it, and photography actually helps those things to come back together. You know, it helps me relax. It helps me to express myself more. You see what I mean?
Right.
So go ahead.
I'm sorry, Bob. It's your interview. Go ahead.
No, that's all right. I just wonder, maybe you don't even know how you did this, but how do you turn the corner, you know, after having an experience like that, and then being able to have that feeling show in your photographs?
What do you mean?
You were saying that your photos were missing that that feeling element, the heart, and now you're incorporating the heart into your work.
Mm-hmm.
How did you do that? Did it just start to happen?
It's very simple. Once I lost my mom, I realized that, you know, the most important things in life, it's actually people. Mm-hmm. It's not things. All right. If you look at my portfolio, and I've showed it more than once on my blog, I believe. Before that, my portfolio. Okay, let me just give an example. My mom was in New York. All right, and she was there, and here I go with my bag, with my DSLR in, and I never really pointed the camera at her. You know, I always pointed cameras at things outside. For example, I went to Central Park and shot flowers, you know, and shot the buildings in New York, walking around. All these things is, you know, just the subject matter was, I was shooting it because I had a very defined vision of what photography was. I expected photography to be about certain things, you know what I mean? And those things I expected photography to be was actually dictated by other people. You know, this is, I went online. I saw what people were doing. So I was kind of – I believed that this is what I was supposed to do. And you have to underline supposed. Once my mom died, I realized that this is bunk. You know, you have to shoot what you really feel inside. And my mom is gone. But now for me, it's my family, my really close surroundings. Most of these photographs you won't see online because they're too personal.
Mm-hmm.
But it's part of the healing process between having such a disconnect between how I express myself and actually feeling something.
So you're trying to record and capture the best memory that's humanly possible.
You got to understand something is that I was so messed up that I could not even look at my mother and tell her I loved her. You know what I mean? That's messed up. You know what I mean? That's how disconnected I was. Like, I love my mom. You know, I totally love my – who doesn't love their mom? You know, I loved her, but I could not bring myself to look at her straight in the eyes and say, I love you. So that's – you know, that's how much there was a – it was really, really disconnected. So photography has been in a healing process. Even if I cannot say to somebody like, I love you and stuff like that, I can at least make a photograph – expressing that, and eventually, you know, I'm gonna be able to open more.
And you said you weren't getting very deep. I don't know about that. That's that's really something. You know, I think that's really common though, just for men in general to not be able to open up.
And then when you lose
somebody, you tend to regret it.
Yeah, and you know, and my wife, you know, she suffers with that. You know, I'll be honest with that. You know, it's like, you don't show me I love you. I'm like, I love you so much, but you know, expressing, that's the whole thing, isn't it? Expressing it. Because if you don't express it, what is that other person going to think? That you don't care, you know, and genuinely so. And another thing happened was actually in February this year, you know, my son almost died, you know, and the first thing I did, you know, they were rushing him to the hospital, and the first thing I did is take a camera, because the camera for me was the link between actually losing my mind, expressing what I felt there, and really, if for somebody that does not express their emotions that much, you know, and once something as terrifying as almost losing someone comes right in front of you, you lose it. I mean, lose it. So I the first thing I did, you know, they were rushing him. I was to go on the ambulance. I just ran to my camera, you know, and I just made pictures. You know, it calmed me down. It allowed me to be in the moment, right there. I'm with my son, not losing my mind. You know, it allowed me to have both to be present and not present at the same time. If you see what I mean. So, photography has been like a healing process in a sense. We can say, you know.
Sounds like you can both say that.
Well, yeah, and it's I mean, it's a bit philosophical, but one thing I've discovered is that some things you cannot really express, and that's where art shines. It's to express what cannot really be expressed. You know, when I say I love you, it means something for me, and it makes something different for you. It means something different for everybody else. But with a photograph, you know, you can express exactly, you know, what I call the one-to-one vision, where you can express exactly what's inside you outside. You know, once you get a photograph that exactly reflects your inner state, you know, it's just bliss. And especially for somebody that couldn't express themselves, you know, held everything inside.
Yeah, you know, it's it's like life lessons. You know, the thing is, like, I mean, you can go to photography school, you can go to art school, you can go to painting school, you can go to doctor school, you can go to anything you want. But if you're not dragging your baggage and dragging your life along with you and applying it to what you're doing, it ain't real. That's all there is to it. It just ain't real. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I forget who said it. No matter where you go, there you are.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. I always look for myself when I'm out there like that. On the street. My doctor thinks I'm going to find myself someday.
Who knows?
Anyway, you know, we should get into street photography, right?
Yeah, but I do want to bring up one other thing that's related to this. The last podcast years I heard, that's what you were talking about. You were talking about the most important work the photos are going to do. And it's funny because I listened to it right after Thanksgiving, I think.
Mm.
And before that, I was in Texas. And for the first time ever, we had our entire family together in one place. And I had my camera with me. I took a few snapshots. The rest of the time I was like aggravated because I wasn't, you know, I didn't get out on the street to shoot as much as I wanted to. And, you know, this is really what I should be doing, shooting on the street. And then I come back and I'm listening to your podcast. I thought, damn, did I miss some opportunities? I had my entire family in one place and I didn't take advantage of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And see, there, it's one thing. That's why I actually despise the name street photography because it compartmentalizes it. You know, for me, street photography is I'm right there with my son and I'm making a picture of him. You know, bam, that's street photography. For me, I think for a lot of people, it would be so beneficial to actually remove the name street photography and replace it by life photography or everyday life photography. You know, it just removes the barriers. So it's basically anything, you know, it can be anything, and it's very liberating in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you. It's just a term we've been starting to use somewhere along the line. I guess we should talk about it a little bit, although you actually are, and you've been getting to the heart of the matter. And well, before we get into the details of your magazine and thing, how did you two get together? You're in different parts of the country. Mm. You know, you probably couldn't be more dissimilar. How do you know each other?
It actually started with me. I just said, let me just do a blog, all right? And for some reason, I really felt black and white as the way I should go. So I continued in the way of black and white work and stuff like that. And one day, I really got pissed because it's like everybody kind of believed that everything looks good in black and white. You know, and I'm like, how foolish is that? You know, it's like point your camera at anything and put it in black and white. It's all of a sudden artsy. So I made an article called Photographic Myths. Yeah, everything looks good in black and white. And I knew Don from the Ricoh forums because I got a Ricoh GRD3. And I'm like, hey, Don, can you just comment on that? You know what I mean? And we started talking. We really started talking, and it was – well, I call it providence, but you know, there were things that were happening in the background. You know, my design background. He had this idea of a photographic center, and just these things coming together. You know, just the right people at the right time, and that's how we met, and we really kicked it off. He's my grandpa now. You're my grandpa, right?
Don? Yeah, as long as you keep behaving yourself.
Okay. All right. Don't worry, and occasionally you get some chocolate from me. All right, but that's how it started, you know. And it was just a matter of providence, perfect timing, and all these good things.
You know, speaking of your blog, I think both of you guys are, I guess I'll use the word, prolific bloggers. Prolific, is that the right word?
Yeah, prolific.
And
thank you.
Yeah, you are. You, I mean, I.
He's a better blogger than he thinks. I mean, he has a way to draw people that just makes me jealous. I mean, absolutely.
Well, I'll tell you, yeah, from what I see, I mean, Don is a really good storyteller with photography and with the written word.
Mm-hmm.
You had one post that I read a while back. It was about you were in Atlantic City, I think, visiting a friend, and you took him out to the beach.
And then you
talked about your friend Jockey. You just pulled it all together in such a great story. And then you took if you took that photo while you were there on the beach, I mean, it was a great photograph as well. And I go, wow, this is really good. You know, what I like about both your blog, you don't really talk a lot about gear and everything, and not even about the craft of photography, but more of the, I guess, the philosophy or the thought process that goes into it. I think anybody who's listening should, if you're looking to put something in your RSS feed related to photography, these are two very, very excellent blogs.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah. And Oliver, I just read one of yours today about when you're frustrated. It says, when you don't work on your photography, you become frustrated.
Oh, yeah, that's me, yeah.
And again, it's more the thinking, because you know, like you said, I mean, we can learn how to use the camera pretty quickly, and we can learn the elements of composition but there's so much more to it, and I think you cover all that. So how do you do it? I mean, it takes time to write these things.
Mm-hmm. You want to go first, Don, or?
How do I do it? Well, I like to have the time to do it more, but when the winter time comes, like now, it's really cold, so I am not on the computer as much as I would like to be. I'm hoping to get back onto it maybe today or tomorrow because I'm busy at nights helping a group of avant-garde police guys get homeless people off the street and into shelters, which they're not supposed to be doing. And I make photographs because nobody can get the photographs of me of documenting what's going on, you know. It's an ad hoc kind of thing, and I do it. And it takes up a lot of my time. I get home, I'm exhausted. I haven't been able to do the blog. But when I do the blog, what happens is I kind of just like sit down and at the keyboard, and it always starts with the photograph for me. I mean, I just like, I want to put this in, I want to put this in, I want to put this in, you know, like out of Lightroom. And I take those photographs and I start to upload them into the blog in WordPress and store them on there. And then I start to write because those photographs bring back memories or they bring back experiences that I want to talk about. And that's just what I do. I'm not a good writer. I didn't finish high school, but it comes from my heart. So what I'm writing on my blog is true. And it's coming from my heart. Mm-hmm. And the photographs, too, are coming from my heart. That's it.
Well, I actually have a different process because I'm the kind of guy that I cannot shut off my brain. So I can be waking up at 2 a.m. To go to the restrooms, and I'm thinking about anything, you know, like how argumentation, this thing, how this doesn't work, how this isn't consistent. So it just completely just runs and runs and runs. And since I'm a photographer, sometimes like, hey, this, look at that, you know. It's been a couple of days since I didn't make some photographs. I feel weird, you know. Things just pop in my mind. You know, they really pop in my mind. And I think a big lie that a lot of people buy into is that they're alone in the world, you know. So I just realized that for everything I feel, I'm not alone in the world. Somebody else at the same time has the same feelings. So I just put it in writing, you know, and since I have I tend to see certain things, so I just bring it all together with the photographs in the blog. So I actually do the opposite. To photograph serve the blog, unlike Don, where it's the opposite. For me, it all starts with an idea or something that I feel, and automatically you'll see that somebody else feels the same way, you know. So it's not magic. It's just writing about my troubles, you know, what I feel, if I have a problem, what I like, what I don't like, and of course other people feel the same way too. And the photographs, what I do is I make sure I don't slack on my photographs in my blog, you know. So because there's a lot of blogs, what they do is they take stuff from older past masters, or they go on Flickr and mm-hmm. illustrate what they're saying, you know. So it's one thing to do that, but for me, I always go out and take my photographs from my blog. You see what I mean? And Inspired Eye, the whole way to blog is set up of Inspired Eye. It's actually, I had this idea ever since I had my blog, but I pushed it out of my thing, and then it became the Inspired Eye. And actually, there's a few other blogs I'm writing on travel and on what's this called, entrepreneurship, you know. And all of it came from the blog and just having some ideas. And it's just like photographs, you know. Photographs, if you have a photograph in your mind and if you don't put it out, you're going to feel stressed because you didn't release that tension, you know. Making photographs is releasing tension that you had in your mind. It's all about exporting what you had in your mind into a photograph that you can hold and look. It's the same thing for blogging. If I don't do that, I'm going to feel stressed. So it's the same process as photography for me.
So, I mean, do you have these articles or these posts planned out way in advance, or is it like, today I feel like this and that's what I'm going to write about?
I really, for Inspired Eye, they're basically planned out. You know, there's some mm-hmm. people that are going to go there here and there, but for
Yeah, your personal blog.
For,
I mean.
Yeah, for personal blog, it's on the fly, and I have no idea how some people do it. I'm pretty sure they buy some to get some some outside help, you know, to ghost block for them, because there's no way they can write that much content in such a short amount of time. So,
yeah, I think less is more. A lot of people are scaling back.
Oh yeah,
and writing less, but
it's the best thing I did. It's the best thing I did, to just one post a week instead of 4 to 5. And especially there was a woman, her name is, I'm not going to name her name, but, you know, more than one guy, you know, they were found to lift off content from other blogs. I'm like, and one of the reasons, it's stressful, man. You got to produce content every day, you know. So I scaled back, and Inspired Eye, all these things, scaled back. And you know, for the blog, so it's been real good, and I feel better and more productive that way.
I know, just as a reader, I don't, you know, I keep an RSS feed, and I you know, scan it on my iPad at lunch and things. And if something's a fire hose that's sending out tons of posts a day, I don't follow it because it's just too much. Mm-hmm. I'd rather see a couple a week from somebody, or one a week, and really, you know, be able to sit down and read it and know there's going to be some meat there.
Yeah, it's overwhelming. Information, there's way too much now. So I guess people will appreciate less, you know.
It's insane. I know, me personally, I have lots of ideas I want to write about, and I just never seem to get around to it.
Oh, yeah. Actually, it's one of the points of my productivity blog that I'm gonna do. It's called a chisel method, and it's basically you set out one chunk of time every day. Doesn't matter if you finish it. Doesn't matter. You know, it's just not about doing everything in one day. It's about doing a little bit every day, an hour, 2 hours, and you'll see. You won't even care if you finish it, not finish it. You'll be very productive and prolific, like you said.
Like the Pomodoro method.
Yeah, I think that is that. Yeah.
Yep.
That's the same thing. Yeah.
Set a timer and don't stop until the timer goes off.
Ah, shucks! I didn't invent anything, but that's okay.
That's okay. It doesn't matter. It still works.
Yeah.
Key is you have to do it. So, are you guys working on any personal projects?
Don.
Well, Don sounds like the homeless story.
No, well, that's not a personal project.
Okay.
That's not a photography. That's a project I do, you know. I guess for humanity, you know, but it's not really like a project, you know, like, I mean, I'm old enough now to know better. Like, if I say I want to do a personal project, I want to work on photographing the street, you know, from this block to that block for, you know, 6 months and just do it. I mean, that's a personal project. This is just like a humanity project. It's like, you know, you got to just keep people alive if you can. What's, you know, that's a little bit more important than making photographs. Although, in that situation, my photographs are extremely important because what happens with that is, you know, is that let's say I see a guy at 13th and Market, and it just like crashed down on the street, you know, it just crashed down on the corner. I make a picture, and then like a couple of weeks later, I'm a few blocks away, and the same guy's there, and he's wearing the same clothes, same place. I make a picture. Then I turn the picture into the homeless advocacy group, and then what they do is with all the photographs I send in, they get them printed. I don't get them printed. They get them printed, and they send it to the mayor's office. And every week, he gets a pile of about 200 or 300 photographs on his desk of homeless people in the city. And that, hopefully, that will make – it's been on for years. That'll make change. But as far as personal projects go, it was kind of funny. Oliver keeps me busy on this personal project. You know, everything's a project. Like, you know, we got a new issue coming out. So I feel like everything is a project, and I kind of get really engrossed in what's going on, like interviews. Mm-hmm. I love doing the interviews. It's not always that easy. I consider that a personal project. Everything we do, like make designing presets, you know, I'll tell him, look, I got this new set working, you know, and he'll give me all, you know, I know he's propping me. I know. I'm not stupid. You know what I mean? I can put money and spank him. You know, but I know he's you know. But he knows how to draw my energy and to focus it better than I do. And I'm not afraid to admit that in an interview. He can get me to focus my energy better than I can do it myself. But as far as like the underlying ongoing personal project, I started when I got home from mom. I started photographing on the street. I've been photographing everything on the street. And I did a shoot today. I was out there. That's my personal project. It's what I do for my whole entire life. And when I'm dead, I'm told that I can take a Leica film with me, but I can't take digital because there's no battery chargers.
Yeah.
So that's it. You're up.
Long story short, I'm actually pretty sure I'm moving to Vietnam, you know, and I'm going to live in as an expat there. I'm an island dude, and when I came here, you know, was really working bills, and it's really starting to take a toll on my health. You know, I have super high blood pressure. You know, so I'm going back to an Asian country to relax. But at the same time, I really think that I want to start a project there documenting the minority people there. You know, there's like 50 of them. You know, so I'm thinking of as a life's work, something that I would like to be remembered with. You know, just like Gene Smith was remembered for his nurse midwife and all these things. I think I want to be remembered for that project because I'm mainly a documentary dude. You know, I just have the chills when I think of documenting with photographs.
Wow, when are you moving there?
I have no clue. Maybe 2 years maximum.
Oh, okay.
So I'm thinking, but I got to go there first. You know, and I don't know. It feels like home for me. So,
That's really cool. I mean, really, anymore you can live anywhere, so why not be where you want to be?
Yeah, Inspired Eye is
you can live there really cheap, very cheap.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons. You know, it's living there for cheap. It's good food because, man. I mean, I you know what I hate is I take care of the kid when he wakes up, so to let my wife sleep, and I absolutely feel horrible when I have to give him some crap to eat. You know, it's like this is not food. It's processed food. You know, help me, somebody. You know, I need better food than that. You know, so I'm like, let me go to some place there is actually food, you know, out of the ground and to give my kid. And I think it's a better environment instead of here where it's all about the television and iPads and stuff like that. It's just a lifestyle, I guess.
Yeah, that's my favorite food, Vietnamese food. Mm.
Yeah, me too, actually. I don't want to. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
I'll be visiting. Don't worry. I'm not afraid to come over, man. I'll be visiting.
So let's talk about the Inspired Eye. Why don't you tell us about the magazine?
Yeah, basically we created the magazine that we wanted to see. I don't know about you, but I more than once I went to Grand Central Station, you know, looked at photography magazines and actually got nothing from them, you know. So actually it goes back with what I said about doing something that you want to see, you know. I was not alone, and Don was not alone in wanting to see a certain type of magazine that actually motivates you to go out and shoot. You know, so one of the biggest points of the magazine that everybody says, and the blog too, is that it really motivates them to be better, go out and shoot, and do the best that they can with what they have. You know.
Yeah, I think it's funny because for me, the soul of the Inspired Eye, when I'm saying not the whole entire soul, but the soul of my end, it goes back to Dane McNulty from the Fellows Museum of Art, and it goes back to Minor White. That's where it goes back to for me. It's like I'm carrying that energy on and passing it on to the next generation.
Yeah, like a spiritual aperture or something?
Yeah, exactly.
Spiritual aperture.
Look, let's face it, Aperture used to be the periodical. It was amazing. It was the best photography. It was great to read. I mean, we all looked forward to it. You couldn't wait to get the issue to look and see what's going on. Then all of a sudden, they started doing this, I call it anti-photography. And they started doing anti-photography. And after like four issues, I canceled it. I think at that point, Minor White had already passed. And I think that, you know, if he actually saw the issue for what it was, and Michael Hoffman had a lot to do with that, I think he would have rolled over in his grave. It just wasn't his vision.
Our general vision, you know, it's basically is that we like photography and not photography that you see all the time, the same people. If it's Bresson or if it's not Bresson, it's Joe Schmo, I have a lot of money photographer, you know. These are good, but they're the 1%. You know what I mean? We want to know the 99%, and we actually embrace people, you know, understand that they come from different backgrounds, they're different levels, you know, but they're all passionate. And everyone that reads the magazine says the same thing, you know, it's like it motivates me, you know, to see great work from everybody around the world. And they don't have to be professional. They don't have to be successful. You know, we had grandparents there. We had parents. We had younger people, you know. We had people in galleries there too. You know, it's showing a spectrum of photography and embracing it, you know, and they're making the reader feel that they're part of this community too. That's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, I think it's about making a connection that people don't have to look up to or down. Just making a connection that we can all see eye to eye. I think that's extremely important. For me, it's not about the name of the shooter or the photographer, because I know a lot of those names. I've been exposed to that. I've been exposed to the work. That's not what's important to me. What's important to me and will always come first and foremost is the image. The image is held sacred. So whoever makes that image, I don't care if it's a guy that's been a photographer for 50 years and he's got works at all museums, or someone who has just taken a camera out and for some reason they saw something and said, oh my, and they pressed a button. I see the images of both on the exact same level. Yeah. I don't differentiate between it on level. Yeah. So I think that's the soul of the Inspired Eye. I really do. That's the soul.
And people relate to that a lot. You know, they feel welcomed and
honored. They get honored.
Yeah.
And they shouldn't feel honored, but they do, you know.
And they don't, you know, they don't feel alienated. You know, a lot of times when I started, you know, I felt like, man, Mr. Bigwing would never sniff me or something, you know, and mm-hmm. I had to deal with that. But, you know, with this magazine, you know, it's really embracing passionate photographers, whatever they may be, wherever they may be. We're actually working on a world map showing you photographers we have from all over the world doing great work, you know.
That's amazing. There are just so many good people out there.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
How are you finding the people to contribute? Are they coming to you? Are you going to them? A little bit of both?
Well, for the interviews?
Yeah.
For the interviews? Yeah. Oliver sends me stuff. He'll send me emails. And now you have to understand, son, even though there's a big age difference between us, you know, he will send things to me and I'll look at it, but he's sending it to me for my approval or my opinion. And I do the same thing with him. So it's not like, yo, I want this guy in the magazine. That never, ever happens. He just says, look, here's three people. They look really cool. Let me know what you think. And then on my end, I search out through Flickr or different places or Street View magazine or something. And I find someone, I say, you know, this person is like, the work is really interesting, but I can sense the passion. You know, I mean, they're going to get better, but they're definitely going to improve because I can see it linear. But their passion is very obvious in there. So then we just start putting it together. Next thing you know, like he very rarely knows everybody that I'm putting in the interviews. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll send it to him. He trusts me. And then I don't always know what Oliver's putting. Like he's got this whole design thing going on, which I have to admit, I really, you know, at first I didn't like it, but I really do enjoy it. It's my favorite part of the magazine. Not my interviews, but his design. So we go back and forth. That's how it happens. Like we search things out. But you know, the thing is, Bob, that it's like if someone has been doing photography for a while and you know, they're really starting to really get into it, and they bought the cameras and they bought the lenses and they got the flash and they got 14 camera bags and they've taken trips and they're doing all this. And then what happens is the residue, when it's all left over, comes down to the photograph. And when someone comes to them and says, hey, I really like what I'm seeing in your work, and I'd like to put you for an interview or a photo spread in our magazine, or Oliver will say, hey, let's put this guy on the block. And when we do, you know what that does for that? Do you have any idea what that does for that person's confidence?
Yeah, I do. You know, we run into the same thing, and people are really gassed. You know, they love the fact that somebody appreciates their work.
And, yeah, that's right.
You know,
And it's even more important now that there's millions and millions of people with cameras, you know, because we got to reward those people who actually put in time and effort in their photography versus a person that just got their camera and thinks they're something, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I spent $5,000 on my camera. I must be good.
$5,000.
Yeah. Yeah.
I spent $7,000. I'll be so much better.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Photographers are like golfers, you know, they'll spend anything for that. that extra edge.
My claim to fame was an article on it wasn't my blog, but on Petapixel and DP Review. It's called Confessions of an Ex-Gear Addict, because I got into photography basically because of gas, and I stayed there a long time. You know, I bought a large format. I had it converted. I had a Polaroid 110B and have it converted into a regular 4x5 large format, and I only shot like two or three frames with that thing. I bought a medium format film camera, you know, for the resolution, because digital sucks, you know. And then I didn't even finish one roll in it. You know, it's just, in the end, you know, I know a lot of people won't appreciate what I say, but in the end, at least for me, it was because I was afraid of being judged by my photographs, so I needed stuff to hide behind. You know, for me, that was the complete issue. So that might be different for other people, but that was my thing with hoarding gear, you know.
I think a large percentage of people have been there, myself included.
Yeah,
you wrote a really nice article on gas and really hit home with me. So I sold everything.
Oh,
I bought a brownie. No.
That's a good idea.
I sold everything. Kept like basically the Ricoh, and I have an X7 and XZ2, like Olympus XZ2. That's it. Yeah.
Yep. I did pretty much the same thing. I sold all my Canon lenses and.
Did I make you sell all these things?
You did. I'm blaming you for it.
Can I get some money out of that?
Yeah, that's right.
Actually, I do get a lot of people donating money, saying like, "Man, you saved me so much. Here's a cut." Yeah,
you actually owe people money because you lose money when you sell gear, so you actually should be paying the difference.
Oh yeah, let's not start with us. We should not start with a eBay horror stories, man.
Yeah,
I'm not going to do that.
Stay away from eBay. I had been thinking about it for a while, and then. I was toying with it, and then I read your post. Like, oh, yeah, that really does make a lot of sense, and just started moving ahead with it.
I'll be the first to say that, you know, if I wasn't doing freelance work on the side with my Nex7, I would only need just one compact camera and do all my work with it.
Yeah. Yeah, my favorite work I've made with small cameras. I think
amazing.
Well... And I think you feel more relaxed when you have something that's simple, and you don't you don't think so much about it. Personally, I tend to overthink everything. Anyway, but let's get back on the subject. Now, you guys also do a podcast, the Inspired Eye podcast.
Yeah.
And so what's the purpose of that?
Well, the purpose is actually to bring attention to what we're doing in the magazine, you know, and if you want to know, the format with that is like I call Don, and or he calls me, and we get talking. You know, that's as simple as that. It's called chemistry.
I like it because you pick one topic and you drill down into it, and it's something I think anybody who likes to photograph can relate to.
Yeah.
We talked a lot about new photographers. Maybe this isn't politically correct for you since you deal with so many people, but... There are a lot of, I don't know if we'd call them new photographers, maybe not famous photographers,
right?
Current photographers. So who are you excited? Pick one person you're really excited about right now.
Current
photographers. You see a lot of them, obviously.
Okay. I think I do know exactly who it is. Her name is Karen Rose. Oh, yeah. And on Flickr, she goes under Briar 34, and on a lot of forums, she used the same thing. She was in our magazine. She's absolutely, I'm her hero, or she's my hero. She's an amazing photographer. She doesn't even know. I mean, I've had conversations with her. She doesn't even know. She's an amazing current photographer. Amazing.
She is totally, and she's a sweetheart too, man. She's really a cool person. For me, I actually have no clue. Here's the reason why. It's because if I look at something too much, I'm gonna start drawing it in and breathing it in, and I'm gonna start looking like that person. So I tend to know exactly what to question, but I mean I don't really have somebody to, because I don't really look at other people's. I do, or look at other people's work, but I don't see somebody that's like, man, I really want to see more of that. You know, not yet. There is some couple of people, but because the circle we're in, it's more fine art, you know, and I'm, like I said, I'm more documentary, you know, so there's not a lot of people actually doing that. But there is one guy from the last issue that we had, Colin Steele, you know, if you look at his...
Oh, yes.
If you look at his, what's this called? Easter in Sicily. I mean, I got the EBGBs when I saw the the cross photograph. Like, oh.
I'm trying to reach him.
Yeah.
The photos of Easter in Sicily. Yeah. The photos of the three women.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm interrupting you, but
it blew me
away.
This guy, like, I'm keeping tabs on. But like I said, you know, it's not a lot of people that have that. Documentary call or will, you know, they're more one-off images, which is fine, you know, it's fine, but I'm more documentary dude, but people like him and other people, you know, but for me so far, even though it's not contemporary, you know, Eugene Smith, man, it's just like, oh, just gives me the chills, you know.
Yeah
Try
to stay in the present, man. I'm not gonna start dwelling on the past, you know. I have prints and stuff like that. I just can't go there, man. I don't even want to think about going there.
Yeah, but let's say Colin Steele. Let's say Colin Steele, you know.
Okay.
And probably other people, you know, just I haven't found them yet. But I'm hunting them down for the magazine, so.
All right. Yeah, I'm going to look up I've seen a lot of Colin's stuff. I'm going to look up Karen's, though, for sure.
Oh, yeah, Karen's amazing, yeah.
Her work is amazing. She's an amazing – you know what else she knows? I think what really is important with Karen over other photographers is she understands what it means to look at a photograph. She understands what it means to look at a photograph.
Yeah,
you can see that when you see her work.
Yeah, she does, and she's awesome.
Good.
Yeah,
I'm gonna check her out today. So, you think we'll ever have any new masters the way we have in the past? You know, whether it's people like Bresson or.
I think it's a closed world already because nobody will ever accept other people as masters. One, and there's the can of worms. What is a master? You know, so
not necessary. It's not necessary.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean back then you needed someone to carry the torch. You know, so when you think about how many photographers were aware of Bresson and the work he was doing. Think about how many in the current time of Bresson, it's a drop in the bucket in comparison to now.
Yeah, true.
Okay. So if we think about in terms of Brian Day today, Brian Day is an amazing photographer. You know, a lot of his stuff is mind blowing. It's amazing images. But I mean, if you think about how many people know him, not that many. That, you know, not as many as should. So does that mean he's a master? No. So I think today we don't need torchbearers anymore. I think that what we need now is people to carry their own torch.
But see, my problem nowadays, and actually, I it's kind of sickening, but you need more to be a marketer more than a photographer. And you will be known, you know what I mean? And that pisses me off, but I can't really do anything about it. But market yourself as a guy that is a mediocre photographer that markets himself will be more known than a good photographer that doesn't do anything, you know? So
yeah, you're absolutely right.
Well, money's involved, you know,
some people know how to create buzz, you know, and gear everything towards that, you know. But I actually got a real episode where I was really down about that. I'm like, man, how can this guy be so popular, you know? And it's like, it's just because marketing, you know. But that's where your integrity as a photographer comes in, you know. Do you want to be like, do crappy work and promote it to death, or do you want to do good work and promote it too, you know?
It's the cult of personality.
Oh yeah.
I wonder if you could tell us where you can be found. I know we've talked in general about your online presences, but if you can tell us how somebody can find you, that would be helpful.
Well, I mean, physically, you could find me You know, you can find me in Philadelphia. I'm usually on the streets, Market Street, between Front and 30th, walking back and forth. As far as, I guess you call cerebrally finding me, Oliver can handle all that. He knows all the connections.
Okay.
Yeah. Internet stuff.
Well, for me, physically, you can find me in the Inspired Eye offices, otherwise known as Starbucks. Yeah, I'm basically there, you know, and at home.
The world headquarters, huh?
Oh yeah, and I'm in Florida, where it's dry, man. It's possibly dry, and yeah, you can find us. You know, you can mainly find us online on our blogs. You know, my blog is f-top8.com spelled out, and Don's is streetshooter.net. You know, and just there's a little contact tab or Inspired Eye too. The Inspired Eye website, www.theinspireddie.net. And send us an email, you know, or Facebook, all this stuff. You know, you're not too far from anybody in this world. So
that's we got for Twitter, sure.
Twitter and all these things. So.
Oh, good. Well, hey, thanks for being here. I really appreciate it. And I hope we can get together again.
That would be great. Thanks so much,
man.
That'd
be nice. Yeah. Nice.
All right. Well, thanks again.
Thanks, Ed.
Okay.